All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio, and you're just listening to Until Justice Is Real by Jackson Brown. Now, we just have a few minutes before our next interview for the program. I just wanted to kind of bring up just a few, one kind of quick kind of news story from the pages of Green Left. And that is, this is an article, this is just a bit of a quick kind of news article by Jim McElroy. And basically, it's kind of reporting on a recent kind of federal court ruling, which has basically ruled that Qantas has unfairly sacked and outsourced 2,500 baggage handlers, ramp workers and cabin cleaners last year, late last year, using the pandemic as excuse. And I think this is a particular kind of important kind of important sort of court decision, in a sense that basically in the kind of context of last year, you know, companies like Qantas and all these kind of airline companies got massive kind of handouts from the government. And of course, the handouts was based on essentially propping up the industry, because obviously one of the kind of things, the impacts of this COVID-19 pandemic has been its the consequences for the kind of airline industry, and the response of the government has been essentially to prop up these companies at any costs. But the hypocrisy is, despite the fact that the likes of Qantas and have received like millions of dollars in subsidies from the government, they still ended up sacking a whole sections of their workforce. So I think, yeah, this is, you can read more, about this, in greenleft.org.au, with the article being titled Federal Court, Qantas Wrong to Outsource Ground Staff During Pandemic. All right. I'll just go play, a quick few, announcements, and then we'll go on to our next interview for the program. You are listening to Green Left, Radio.
The Black Lives Matter movement is not going away here or overseas. It gives me hope seeing the numbers of people that turn out to these Invasion Day demonstrations in Melbourne. It gives me the understanding that we will win, folks. We will succeed!
Subscribe to 3CR in 2021. Feed Radical Radio. Subscribe today. Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe. Or call the station on 94198377.
All right, you are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. And for our second guest on the program, we're very happy to have Tom Tanuki, who we've actually previously had on our program before. But Tom Tanuki is a pretty prominent anti-fascist activist. He runs he's part of this sort of group called Yelling at Racist Dogs, and he's also a comedian and also regular kind of commentator. And in fact, one of the reasons we're having him on the program today is to kind of have a bit of a kind of discussion about the kind of appearance of these sort of large, well, not necessarily large, I don't want to sort of overstate how big they are, but there is this kind of appearance of this anti kind of lockdown kind of movement, which is kind of linked to the far right. So we're having Tom on the line to have a bit of discussion about it. So yeah, good morning, Tim. I'm Tom.
Good morning. Thanks for having me along.
Yeah, so Tom, I guess to kind of start off, we recently wrote an article for The Independent Australia for this, and of course you probably also noticed that last night there was actually quite a significant anti-lockdown protest in response to the snap lockdown by the Victorian government, which kind of attracted over 1,000 people. And I guess I want to kind of hear your kind of assessment, I guess, and analysis on where this kind of anti-lockdown movement has come from, and it's like, and the kind of politics it's kind of putting forward.
Yeah, sure. Like, I mean, last night had anywhere from as low as 1,000 people to possibly 3,000-4,000, and that's not me trying to overstate numbers. In fact, I found a couple of weekends ago with those enormous protests all along the eastern seaboard that people were by and large, you know, really underestimating the numbers as well. So we can't, you know, underestimate how big they tend to grow, although it tends to be a very flash growth, you know, it's a situation thing. And to answer your question about the anti-lockdown movement, well, I would say it's just, I would characterise it as being a loose conglomerate of a series of factions, or as QAnon Anonymous podcaster and researcher Travis Yu says, he calls movements like QAnon big tent groups, and that means that there's very different factions, I suppose, vying for information control. And within that movement, I suppose the factions that you have are the anti-vax faction, who seem to have won out. I mean, you know, with the fairly obviously in hindsight, because what does a pandemic do in its later stages? It ends up with everyone having to talk about getting vaccinated. But you've also had sovereign citizen elements. There was an early stage anti-5G element. Yes, it's been some of the QAnon stuff, and yeah, various other elements like that. And as you sort of identified, there has been a meddling far-right element in there. Not controlling, but there have been far-right people trying to indoctrinate people along to anti-Semitic ideas from day dot. You know, they've been doing that daily. So within there, I suppose, you have melting pot conspiracy groups on Facebook, or increasingly Telegram, because a lot of these places have been banned off of big tech, you know, mainstream platforms. And within those spaces, people share conspiracies. It would almost be a leaderless movement if it weren't for this presence of figureheads, you know, and people who create these constant spectacles, whether it be stunts or GoFundMes or constant videos, and some of them have different motivations. I mean, some of them, and this is pretty typical of everyone, I suppose, in the modern social media age, people either want the attention that comes with having a video that has 100,000 views, or they want the money. You know, they're seasoned grifters like Avi Yemeni, who've used every single spectacle that they could create throughout the lockdown to do GoFundMes, you know, and they've ensured that their dinners for the next few years are sorted. And then there's I suppose there's the political career. So there's a lot of people who want to turn this anti-lockdown movement into a voter bloc for their upcoming fringe or independent party. So they're those people sort of shape the movement and give it a bit of direction, you know. However, you notice things like last night, once you've brought all these people in, you know, if situations occur that make them all anxious and angry, like the snap lockdown, then you can suddenly get thousands of people out on the streets with little to no organising, which is, what you like, but it's pretty incredible.
And so going into kind of the next question, you kind of brought up this whole thing about political kind of careerists. And one interesting kind of thing I stumbled upon kind of last night, was that, the One Nation kind of Senator, Malcolm Roberts, they've actually produced a video advertising what I assume to be, rallies that are anti-lockdown in nature and, basically against mandatory kind of vaccination. But what sort of struck me about this kind of video was it had this element of it was a montage of different people speaking out in support of this upcoming sort of anti-lockdown, anti-mandatory vaccination sort of protest. And yeah, what was sort of interesting was it had people who would be typically associated with the far right, or the very far right of politics, i.e. One Nation, Rise Up, etc. But on the other hand, you also had people that looked like they sort of came from a sort of hippie sort of, alternative sort of lifestyle sort of background, typically something, you know, people within that reign would actually be more associated with the kind of left than the right. And I guess I want to sort of hear your kind of assessment on why do you think that this sort of strange sort of alliance appears to be sort of happening within the anti-lockdown movement?
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting question, and one that you know would probably take an extremely long time to break down in full. But you know, some of my best guesses are that if you look at the history of anti-vax and say medical libertarian movements, particularly in places like America with horrendous social welfare nets, you know, example. The ability to access medical care is extremely hampered for most people. You understandably see this wellness circuit rise up where people can offer you with natural alternative solutions to the extortionately expensive hospital care in America. And that's not American alone. You know, that sort of network of wellness, I suppose, you know, drifting, extended throughout the world, and that is very much coded as, I wouldn't necessarily say left-wing, but left-wing adjacent, because we have a history of associating neo-spiritual hippie types, for better or for worse, with the left-wing. And I think, you know, the groups like that become really susceptible to the manipulations of well-funded, you know, fringe or lobby type groups, and they became susceptible, of course, to the anti-vax, you know, organisation. And we know that anti-vax is a billion-dollar industry. We know for a fact that it makes billions of dollars for big tech social media. So, you know, and that's them paying for their own advertising and such. So you can only imagine the amount of money in there. And, you know, anti-vax, of course, you know, always talks about how big pharma is evil because of its profit-driven motive, and I am not going to disagree with that. But, however, one of the saving graces, one of the few saving graces, is that at least Big Pharma has legislation and regulations and the like keeping it in check. But, you know, some grifter associated with the anti-vax movement who creates videos and creates spectacles, they have no such checks and balances. And I think the same could be said a lot of that sort of wellness circuit. And I noticed from the start of the anti-lockdown movement, they were feeding people in from the very outset. You know, you've also got associated with the wellness circuit is the MLM kind of circuit, the multi-level marketing people. And, you know, this extremely hampered people's capacity with lockdowns and the like to do their direct networking sort of angle. And so MLMs, you know, and the people around them. There's a virulent medical libertarian sort of messaging that fed a lot of people that you would have once thought were kind of left people into there. And, you know, things I'm hearing from people that towns like Mullumbimby have just become, you know, completely, you know, struck down the middle. You know, there's an enormous divide there. And the day-to-day of these anti-vax or anti-lockdown groups where they're organising are extremely catastrophic in their messaging. You know, I am never more anxious than when I'm looking into those spaces myself, because you're hearing about these control plans by the population to take everyone over and to force them into subservience. It's an extremely fear-based movement, and that will bring anyone together if you successfully do it, whether that be left, right, or whatever.
And one of the sort of interesting gave a kind of a good sort of analysis of all the kind of different sort of eccentricities within the kind of movement, and I guess this sort of growing sort of anti sort of lockdown kind of movement. But I guess one of the other sort of things that we can't kind of forget is how this kind of movement has actually kind of grown in response to the failures of the government. Because, you know, on the other hand, though, I also would like to also mention that in terms of this kind of anti-lockdown protest, even though this anti-lockdown protest is clearly being cracked down by the state, for better or worse. The police sent massive kind of, had a massive sort of, enforcement, to basically get, to stop a lockdown protest from anti-lockdown protest from happening last weekend in Sydney. But yeah. One of the kind of other interesting things to note is, when these anti-lockdown protests were happening kind of last year, the kind of mainstream news outlet, because the mainstream Murdoch news outlets were anti-lockdown at the time, they're apparently now pro-lockdown because New South Wales is doing it, but there was actually this encouragement from the Murdoch kind of press of this kind of far-right anti-lockdown movement, and we even had comments from Scott Morrison last year, when asked about the big size of this anti-lockdown protest, he sort of tried to explain away as people expressing their anger. On the other hand, that's not what he said about the Black Lives Matter protests that were in solidarity with George Floyd. So I kind of want to kind of hear your kind of assessment on, you know, this, the growth of this movement in the context of the government's failures and also the complicity of, you know, the Murdoch media and so on in actually propping up this movement.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that I think hampered the growth of it was the incredible emergency welfare net that was extended to not everyone. There were notable gaps with people who were here on, you know, like visas or what have you, you know, refugees, various other groups of people, casuals who'd worked for less than 12 months with JobKeeper. There were gaps, but there was nevertheless a pretty broad social welfare net that I think saved us and made it possible for people to stay at home. After all, how can you know, the truth is you cannot do lockdowns effectively over the long term unless you're giving people something that they can eat meals with whilst they adhere to your instruction to lock down. And the difference between this year and last year is that that social welfare net is all but gone. They reduced the job seeker back down to almost pre-pandemic levels. And there's no more JobKeeper. They make offers about certain temporary welfare measures that you can access, but only if you can demonstrate that your income has dropped by a certain amount, which of course isn't possible for a lot of people because of their, you know, nature of their work or what have you. So, you know, so situationally, because of this woeful government response, not to mention the completely screwed up vaccine rollout, you see that when people get angry and anxious, there's no net for them. There's nothing for them to be protected by. So they hit the streets. You know, and they did that with pretty little notice a couple of weekends ago in Sydney, and they had tens of thousands of people out there. And we cannot sit back and say that all of those people were, you know, red-pilled, far-right, anti-vax, this and that and the other. They certainly weren't. A lot of them were just pissed off people, pardon the French, who came out with barely any notice at all because they weren't being supported. They were being told in Western Sydney that they couldn't go to their work, you know, because they'd shut down construction. And that's cash in hand for a lot of people, so they couldn't access any other benefits. The rental moratoriums weren't available to them. And so, you know, thanks to this government mess up, people are joining the anti-lockdown movement. And so, you know, I'm constantly wrestling with the question of what should we as the left be saying about this? And what we should be saying, in my belief, is that, you know, we should be talking about how we don't believe in state restraint. We believe in self or communal restraint. Now, some of the best things I saw coming out of the entire pandemic were the amazing mutual aid efforts of last year. Now, they're very difficult to do, you know, during lockdowns, I admit, you know, and particularly as time goes by, but we do not, you know, I do not support this excess of state restraint. When I see there, and when I watch and I see police being absolutely brutal with people who I don't necessarily agree with, I don't cheer it on. You know, I will never do that because I've been around in activism long enough to know that the next up will be my comrades. And we should know about that. And what we should be demanding is material gains for people. Because without those things, people can't and they won't stay at home. And the only direction that they'll get, because they're not getting any from our government, is from these ludicrous Telegram groups where they're being told that there's a New World Order plan just put them under control, you know. They'll get their direction from there and they'll keep hitting the streets, whether they're in a hot spot or not.
Hmm. Well, I think you kind of gave a kind of good, really kind of good kind of note. We're kind of running a bit out of time now, but I guess, do you have any guess, any sort of concluding kind of comments you like to make? I mean, that was almost like a very good conclusion, but I'm sure you might have sort of some other comments you might want to add, because I guess one sort of interesting point I just want to add as well is I've actually heard on that regards to the question of kind of the police, I've actually heard of there has been some reports, although this hasn't necessarily made the mainstream sort of media, and of course not a completely 100% sure on whether all these kind of reports would be true, but of course it's not, it wouldn't be unsurprising if this was the case. But one of the kind of interesting sort of dynamics with this anti-lockdown protest is that there is this sort of talk that there's individual kind of police officers who are actually in support of these kind of anti-lockdown protests, but which wouldn't be unsurprising because there is a lot of links between the police and the far right, especially in countries like Germany. But I guess another sort of interesting sort of dynamic from some of the rhetoric I've actually seen from some of these anti-lockdown protests is they've been very keen to sort of give a message that the police are actually supporting the protests, which is sort of very different from how the left would like to conceptualize our protests. We tend to define our protests as good if the police don't support it. And so, yeah, that's sort of an interesting dynamic there, if you had any comments on that.
Yeah, well, it's such a mixed bag, I have to say. I have seen extremes of both ends. I've seen some of the most aggressive approaches to police I've ever seen at rallies, just looking at live streams at the like, combined with that sort of Pepsi ad style, oh, if only the police would join us kind of hand-wringing approach. And I'm sure that there are, you know, which is, that's a little bit of a far-right thing in my experience, you know. Those two poles of very different attitudes and just flipping between them as it suits the movement. So that's quite far right. But, you know, I'm sure that there are people, police who are on board, but I think there's also probably a lot of police officers who, are tired of having to risk themselves during outbreak points going out to deal with movements that aren't essentially even calling for anything. And I think we should forget that essentially they're calling for the end of all lockdowns based on the presupposition that coronavirus is an exaggeration or an outright lie. And unfortunately, that's not terms that we're going to have to come to agree with. So we end up at a bit of a stalemate here. But I would make one more statement just to muddle things a bit further, which is that, you know, there's another thing that's a mixed bag about this movement is that, yes, they have very staunch far-right elements trying to manipulate them, but I have also seen that they've taken quite a principled approach. Some elements of the movement have taken a principled approach to trying to oust far-right elements. I've seen one neo-Nazi, a guy called Jared Searby, kicked out of a group of his beliefs, and I think there was a bit of coordinated organisation behind that. And I have seen some elements trying to do their best to get rid of those elements. Now, does that mean that we suddenly agree with their response to coronavirus? No, but it just means it's worth noting that this is an extremely mixed bag, and it at least offers me some hope that maybe there might be a point at which we could come into a kind of a dialogue, because my dream is that we could at least tell these people that, you know, when it comes to some of their freedom-based messaging, you know, I don't think it's a call for anything too substantial. I would be happy for them to do their corny freedom protests. I just want them to do it when there's not an outbreak happening, you know? So that's my very minimum demand. My much stronger demand, and this is what I think everyone should join me, is of our government. People need reforms. I'm not saying that the people hitting the streets of the anti-lockdown movement are asking for more material support. They're not necessarily. They're asking for the end of the NWO. but if we could give them that support, then perhaps they wouldn't hit the streets so much because they would be able to eat. So that's what I think we should all be getting behind.
Yeah. Well, we've probably run out of time. I think, thank you very much, Tom, for, being on our program. I think you've given a lot of, great food for thought and, given a sort of great kind of analysis on this kind of, recent Cronulla. And of course, it will be definitely be the subject, I guess, of future discussions on our program and within the, and within left kind of media as well, because this movement right now is not necessarily going to be going away. So yeah, thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks so much for that, Jake. And if anyone wants to hit up my YouTube channel, Tom Tanicky, I'm doing constant analysis on the latest goings on of the anti-lockdown movement. So hit that up if you want to see what my take is on the latest goings on.
All right. Thank you very much, Tom.